All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Friday, September 2nd. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are going to talk a full Friday slate of baseball. We're from DFSR.com, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com. Head over to the site. Check out all the free content we have going up there if this is your first time listening. If this is your many, many times listening, then you'll know this spiel. You can go over to the site and go to DFSR.com/LAB Lab, where you can get a free, now 8-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which is going to help you calculate or one touch calculate optimal lineups for both FanDuel and DraftKings. And that subscription includes MLB, of course, and also NFL. And the reason we have that 8-day trial up there right now is that's going to take you through the first week of the NFL season so you can road test the NFL projections, see how you like it, and it's just $29.95 a month after that, which is about as good a deal as you'll get in the entire industry, and that includes all sports. We don't section off sports like some other sites. We just throw it all into one package, all under the DFSR umbrella, and you are good to go. Friday, September 2nd, let's talk some baseball. All right, we have a game going into Coors, which it's funny about Coors. I kind of just like, I like the days where there's no Coors because I kind of just like don't like talking about it and the pricing and the implied runs being significantly higher. What's your feeling when you see a game going in Denver? Like, is it something that excites you? Does it get your brain churning in ways you don't want to? Like, what's your overall feeling about Coors?
Almost, I feel kind of bored. I think at this point, especially this late in the baseball season, even like the more casual players are kind of hip to Coors. The pricing always makes it a little bit weird. You know, long gone are the days where you could play those guys at regular prices, like the Diamondbacks going against Jorge De La Rosa. So, you know, it's priced relatively fairly. It's just another game, though, because, you know, unlike when guys go to Texas where we might get a new opportunity, you just don't get a new opportunity. So just don't really care.
The thing with Coors today is there's some very, I would say, blatant pricing problems on some players today, which we'll get to more importantly when we get to the bats, where it is going to be, I think, just pretty easy to basically stack that game for cash and really for tournaments too, though. The question you always need to ask yourself on a day with that is how much do I want to fade a game that has, you know, an implied run total 15 to 20% higher than any other game on the slate. We'll get to that a little bit more when we get to hitters, when we talk about where some of those pricing problems are.
Do you think anyone's going to jam Robbie Ray today, just on the same, while we segue into pitchers? Do you think anyone's going to take a shot on him for like a big tournament or anything like that, given the pretty low price and the upside?
He's not low enough for me on DraftKings at 6,000. Like, I would need to see it probably like in that 4,500 range to even really start considering it.
4,500? The guy's got 185 strikeouts this season?
Yeah, it's just like he has all the wrong makeup, I feel like, for that. Like, it's just, he walks a few too many guys. He relies, I'm pretty sure he's a heavy curveball guy, which is not something that plays there. I need to look that up. I'm pretty sure he's fastball curveball, though I could probably pause the podcast and make double sure about that, but I'm happy to just guess on it. Yeah,
sure. Sounds smart. Yeah.
I don't think he's just not enough of a money line favorite here. For some reason, Vegas is just not liking his chances at all, and I tend to sometimes side on that side of things with just sort of implied run stuff on him. I'm not going for it at all.
Fastball slider on Robbie Ray, by the way, but he sliders are also not super ideal. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, he will leave the ball up in the zone, and I don't know. It doesn't seem like a risk worth taking to me. I was just wondering because people seem to have been absolutely in love with Robbie Ray this season.
Yeah, I mean, right now the Rockies have, I have him for 5.75 implied runs, and it is just...
Seems like a lot.
Right. I mean, even with that said, like, he still comes as a points per dollar play, 1, 2, 3, 4th in our system on DraftKings. So yep. It's not like he's the worst guy in the world considering price, and that really is because his strikeout upside is significant. That's where the system's drawing that in, because we factor in implied runs into our model, and so if it's seeing, you know, a good portion of the 5.8 runs on Ray's side, and it still doesn't mind him from a points per dollar place, but I don't think you need to do it at all. Let's talk about.
I'm going to keep talking about this, whether you want to or not.
I don't want to, but
I do like. I will say that, like, as you get down into that area, though, I think I like him better than any of the other guys that are cheaper than him. You know, even the guys that come up with the higher points per dollar in our system, just because, yeah, Coors is Coors, and that makes it really tough. But I think people will probably be off it for that reason. And just no one has near the K upside that he does in any of these other parks. So sure, he could go in there and get blasted and walk a bunch of guys and it could be a complete disaster, but it's not like the Rockies don't strike out. And if you're choosing between him and, like, I mean, it's 700 to go up to Alex Cobb against Toronto, not celebrating there. And then you go down, you're not going to play like Doug Fister or Chad Green or any of these other bums. So I think that if you do want to have a second pitcher two option, I think he's worth a consideration. Now I'm ready to move on.
Oh, you called it. Okay, great.
Now you can talk
about I'm actually not even going to follow up anything because I don't really want to talk about him anymore. Let's talk about pitchers that are actually are in good spots today. If which, you know, let's, we have some true bums going. We have some kind of unknown qualities going, which we can talk about in a second, where I'm just like not totally sure what to make of them yet. But if I'm looking just to start off with cash games, in terms of safety, in terms of pedigree, where do you, we point the needle to kind of first for, you know, we do like to concentrate on cash games a little bit more, well, significantly more than GPPs, simply because that is where a majority of your bankroll should be going on a given day. So that is what, if people ask me, all you guys ever talk about is cash games. Well, that should be the backbone of what you're really doing on a day-to-day basis. Where,
well, also, let me dive in on that too, because yes, cash games should be probably, also, I think you're going to become a better DFS player if you focus more on cash games. I know when I first got started in this, I was focusing on big tournaments, and, you know, big tournaments are, it's almost a different exercise to create big tournament lineups versus like 50-50 and double up lineups. And in the big tournaments, you're almost, especially in baseball, you're almost thinking more, it's almost more of a game theory decision than it is an actual DFS decision. So if it, a really good big tournament podcast would look like someone, and we do this, I think, would look like someone just giving you the over-unders and then telling you which guys to cluster from different teams. But generally speaking, just take the 3-4-5 hitter or the 2-4-5, you know, whoever's got the good platoon matchup. So, like, that's just not interesting to me. Like, it's not interesting. Like, when we first got into this again, reading people's article where they, you can call every single guy a good GPP play, who cares? You know, like,
right.
I don't know. You're not saying anything by saying a guy is a good GPP play to me. So that's why, you know, to clarify for the listeners out there, why we don't talk about that much. We do put our Stacks article up every day with a little bit more of a deeper dive into that. But for this podcast purposes, our goal is to help you improve at DFS and also not lose your shirt. So that's why we talk cash games.
Yeah, and I think that, like, when it comes to the when it comes to those decisions, like, I think you put it really well. Like, everything is in play, basically, and the ideas behind it are just totally different. And there's just simply too many. Like, yeah, I really get thrown off when someone says, "Oh, he's a good GPP play." I'm like, well, what the, that doesn't mean anything, really. Like, it doesn't mean anything in a vacuum. Everyone's a good GPP play to some degree. It's sort of like exists on this like weird sliding scale. Anyway, cash games, pitcher, go. Who are we looking at?
It's a strange day today, actually, because there's no slam dunk ace in a great matchup like a Scherzer and Petco sort of situation. All of the guys, at least on FanDuel, 10,000 or above, all have some warts in my mind. And then there's a big dive in safety after that. So let's just break them down one by one. I'm going to exclude, for me, Danny Duffy right away. Just all the right-handed bats in Detroit. I'm just not interested, frankly. I mean, it seems like, and Duffy is, well, obviously the upside is pretty electric. There's no reason for me to personally take on that risk. Then we go to Price in Oakland. You know, better matchup, definitely a safer matchup. The problem there is that, you know, Triggs, while he's an unknown quantity to a lot of guys, he's got much better peripherals than most people think. It's not going to be the type of thing where Oakland's just going to roll over and hand them the win. So, and compound that with the fact that they just don't strike out at all. So I don't know if I'm going to feel super, super happy jamming him either. We go to Syndergaard. He's facing Washington. Obviously, they've got some high-profile left-handed bats that could lead to some high totals there as well. And then we have Carlos Carrasco, who, for me, is sort of the leader in the clubhouse right now. Carrasco remains sort of one of those underrated Tier 1A level aces who, you know, has a reasonable lineup behind him, you know, strong right-handed pitcher. The Marlins still without Giancarlo Stanton, obviously, so for me, that's kind of where my head is headed, but I'm curious to know where you're at.
Yeah, I like Carrasco. I love the money line. He's gone. He started at minus 185 up to minus 210 at the time of this podcast, 9:35 Eastern. So, and I don't see it really creeping too far down. You know, some people will come off playing that short slate last night and look at the Marlins and say, wow, look what they did to DeGrom last night. I mean, that doesn't really, those things don't really ever factor in for me at all. You know, Yelich had a great game. They got, you know, DeGrom had some walk issues, which caused him some problems. They got generally lucky, I think, in some spots. So, like the last night. I just know that's how people think. That's why I'm really addressing it. I don't think that way at all because DeGrom was a heavy start. So I really do like Carrasco. You know, there's some innings issues with him that are a little concerning. Where I don't, he's not a guy that will go super late into games. He does kind of pitch himself into problems from time to time. Where, but the encouraging piece over the last four games for him, one walk, and that's a number that is, I mean, his K to walk ratio over the last four games is like 30 to 1, something like that, maybe more, 36 to 1. So if he's a guy that can keep the ball in the zone, he's a great matchup here. He doesn't ever really top 100 pitches, which does limit the upside just a little bit. Like, the Indians are really, really consistent with this. Like, he just hits that 98, 99 mark and is just see you later, bullpen time.
Yeah, that's true. Although, you know, not all pitches are created equal, I think, too, for him. And, you know, he had averaged essentially a flat 7 innings to start in the 4 starts before the not-so-good one in Texas. Again, it was kind of odd. Like, he wasn't getting crushed in Texas or anything, but, like, 8 Ks against 1 walk, just got kind of nickel and dime to death there in a bad park. So I think you get more safety out of his 100 pitches than you would out of Robbie Ray's 100 pitches.
Totally agree. And the only problem with that pitch thing is that, as opposed to some of the other, you know, tier 1 starting, you know, aces guys, where teams will allow them to go, you know, 10 to 15% more if they're really cruising, or if they want to get him to the fifth inning or whatever it is. If you're in a strict pitch count like this and you do run into any kind of problems, your upside is just kind of totally dusted. So that's
and all that said too, I think that, like, to that end, I could definitely see people playing Syndergaard here, and I might wind up heading in that direction as well. Syndergaard's a guy who had a stretch of really having a poor innings pitched count there. He went like 5-5, 6-6, 6-5, 4 all the starts leading up to the last two, and then had two quite excellent starts against Philly and San Francisco. That's going to be front of mind for most folks. He does have the K upside that's on par with anyone in the league. Also has similar control to Carrasco. And the Washington matchup, while it's, you know, not super, it's, I might have overstated how bad that is in my initial analysis there. So I could really see him, you know, being the chalk play ultimately.
Speaking of pitch counts, the other guy that's really showing high up in our system right now, and we had leveled him down a little bit since the first update, but he's still pretty, it's pretty much across the board, at least on FanDuel, but it's a pitch count issue, Jameson Taillon. He gets sent down to the he pitches 57 pitches in his last start. Then he gets sent to the minors, but that seemed more of like a routine roster maintenance thing than it was anything else.
Sure.
And then he's back up now. He's only 7,400 on FanDuel, with some higher priced bats going really just in a couple different nice spots today. Is this a guy that you can get behind between the money line, the matchup, and just like what he's done this season?
This is going to be a really big crisis of conscience for me. I mean, I think Taillon, the reason I'm considering him, frankly, even, is just because I'm not in love with any of the top tier options. But what it's going to come down to me is a much deeper inquiry into just to what the other options are in terms of bats. Saving 3,300 going down from Syndergaard to Taillon is obviously fantastic. I mean, playing an extra $3,300 hitter every night would make it so you basically would never lose. So, you know, it's going to have to be a pretty big difference between the two, and our system at present is not really reflecting that big a difference. All that said, I think that, you know, when you really break down, and by the way, I think Vegas sort of sees not that big a difference either. I mean, if you just look at the two games on a high level, you got, you know, the Pirates are a -169 favorite with an 8 total, and the Mets are a -162 with a 7.5 total. So yeah, that's a better implied run total for Taillon, but it's like pretty small. It's very, very fractional, and he, you know, is $3,000 cheaper. So that's very significant. What I don't love about Taillon is, you know, unlike the guy we were sold on when he was coming up, the electric K upside just really hasn't been there, right? I mean, 63 Ks against 12 walks in 77 innings paints more of a picture of a guy who's an excellent control pitcher without, you know, elite K stuff. So I don't know. I'm not going to be, this is one of those things where the math is so much trickier than what your gut tells you, because your gut tells you not to play him, especially given that he was bad against this very team in his last start. But it's going to be close for me. I'll say that right now, as of 940, I am considering him very, very heavily.
Well, here's the thing with our system right now with him. We have him projected for 5.9 ish innings, right in that territory, which could be if anything, it's probably a little too high for like a mean for mean average performance, whatever. So,
well, that's exactly how many innings he's pitched per game this season. So I don't think it's terrible.
Okay, well, here's the thing. So the way our system is operating now, I'm speaking strictly on FanDuel. On FanDuel, it's coming in at 133 projected points for lineup number one. If you remove him, you take a full 3-point drop. That's pretty drastic. Like we don't. I mean, for those that people that haven't used our system and haven't seen like how optimal lineups are calculated, and maybe some how close the decisions are. Some nights, you know, some nights you'll get four different pitchers in the first 10 lineups or something like that.
And we're talking about a difference of 0.1 points.
Exactly. Right. Where you get down to like the right. Even better example probably just be like two pitchers if it's like kind of close, right? Two pitchers and they're the projected difference is in that less than 1 point. 3 whole points would mean essentially I'd have to lower his and I'm not planning on doing this, but just as the exercise, I'd have to lower his innings down to like the low fives of innings for him to pitch, for him not to show up in the optimal lineups. And that's right now where we'll still probably get some lineup decisions that it's going to help us get maybe some bigger bats in. I don't know. It's just, it's going to take a huge difference in either projection or some other thing to get Tyon out of FanDuel lineups. Is that something you're going to feel comfortable with going in?
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to have to really take a look and figure out where the exact concessions are being made. Right. So, like I just did a really quick and dirty look at this right now, and the difference between the Tyon and the Carrasco lineup, for instance, it's basically going down from Wellington Castillo to Travis d'Arnaud, which, you know, you're not thrilled, obviously, to do something like that, and to go from Brian Dozier down to Josh Harrison, and that's pretty much it, right?
Right.
Yeah, so and that gets you most of the way there, and then maybe there's one other change, but you know the question of giving up that 2400 to go from Castillo and Dozier down to Harrison and d'Arnaud is going to be worth it for a lot of people, I think. I mean, the peace of mind that comes with that is significant, I think, and I don't you know, I wouldn't begrudge anyone making that call. You know, as to whether I'll make that call or not, again, I'm not comfortable sticking my neck out there. I just don't want to not do it and have people be confused.
For sure.
But yeah, I don't know. I think it's close. I think that, you know, there's enough contextual stuff with Tyon, you know, the getting rocked against the Brewers in his last start. Again, we don't want a one game sample size, you know, it's getting sent down to the minors, you know, it's reasonable for them to call it a roster move. Use one of his options to do that. But my antenna are at least up and I'm just not sure. Sorry to not have a declarative statement there.
Yeah, no, I think right now if I were to do it, I'd feel pretty confident. I mostly just feel confident in the 7,400. It's so cheap for a starting pitcher with this kind of money line and this kind of implied. You know, the Brewers, yes, they rocked him last time. He has a big park upgrade going from Milwaukee back to Pittsburgh in this matchup.
Yeah,
sure. So, you know, while that's not, you know, good for, you know, that wouldn't tell the whole story of what happened to him in Milwaukee, but it definitely does help him against a team that will strike out a lot. So I think right now, if I were to do it, I actually feel like I can make a pretty declarative statement for him on FanDuel. But again, this is still early in the day, and things change.
I think that there's another exercise here because I like the idea of things not painting the full picture, like you said. And I think another thing that doesn't paint the full picture is just a total projected point total from an optimal lineup. Because, you know, not all points come as consistently as others,
sure.
Right? So, like, you know, again, as a thought experiment, if you could take, say, Noah Syndergaard, and this is just, you know, picking two random guys. Say you took Noah Syndergaard at 10,000, and then you took, you know, say, Bryce Harper and Jose Bautista and Travis d'Arnaud at 10,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
The output from those three hitters for $10,000 versus the output at one pitcher at 10,000, like in your mind, what does your gut tell you would be a safer way to try and hit a projected point total?
Oh, clearly the pitcher, but I mean, the obvious answer is the pitcher just because of the nature of how they score points.
Right, just by existing, pitching innings, getting the strikeouts that come essentially every game, stuff like that.
Right, and that exercise would always win out in favor of the pitcher, but it doesn't always make it correct to play that $10,000 pitcher based on, you know, the downside you get by rostering that much that salary for a guy in a situation that's just like not that great for him, right? So
100%. No, I mean, you're spot on with that. But this is the weird calculus I think that people have to do is try to value for them and their goals in a given game. Because like I think your goals as a really high volume cash game player are going to be a lot different than the average listener's goals, who, you know, has X buy-in that they want to roll. Maybe they're not a user of the system. Maybe, you know, it's a struggle for them to break even, all this other stuff. And for them, they have $50 that they want to keep moving from now to the end of the season. I think for those people, taking on Tyone in their cash games would be, you know, not reckless per se, but like maybe not in line with their goal of making it to the end of the season, I guess.
I think ultimately what you, the other factor that comes in here, we spent a lot of time talking about this, but the other factor that comes in here is basically for cash games is like, you know, relative to what the rest of the field is going to do. And so I think what you'll end up seeing is on a day where the pitching decisions at the top end of the tier aren't really that clear cut, and there's a game in cores, I think people will happily just get a guy in with this kind of, you know, implied money line and, or just give me implied runs against and money line for him, who's had some success this year. So I don't know. I think that's where I do think that's where the chalk ends up going. By the way, if you take him out of the FanDuel Opto lineups, the next up guy is Marcus Stroman. So, and this will probably be the last pitcher we talk about here, just so we can get into the bats before we get out of here. But Stroman against the Rays, Alex Cobb coming back from injury. I think this is the first time he's pitched this year. Stroman gets the Great Park in Tampa Bay. The Rays do K. He's also cheap. Can you, again, like I'm just speaking just from a system point of view, where if I don't roster Tyone, he is, you know, next man standing. Is this a guy that you can get behind, or does he have the same kind of question marks?
I mean, Stroman has his own question marks for sure. A lot of people are going to balk at the 4.58 ERA, but he's actually a pitcher I'm really keeping an eye on right now. I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize just because he came up when he was pretty young and, you know, was reasonable but not terrific, he's really young. I mean, he's a new 25 years old. An incredible ground ball rate on him. The last two seasons, 64%, 61% ground ball rate. And this year, he's kind of paired it with better K stuff than he's shown really at any point, you know, certainly throughout his major league career. But, you know, he's touched the double-digit K per nine in the minors in the past. And so Stroman is a legit guy. He's really shown much better K stuff in his last three starts, 8-9, and then 5-6 innings against Minnesota. 13 strikeout start at Houston in the beginning of August. So, yeah, I can absolutely get behind that play, particularly for big tournaments. And I think you can make a strong case for him with the elite ground ball rate in cash games as well. So, he's arguably, to me, he's possibly safer than Tyone.
And the last guy I think that's just worth bringing up because he's a nice money line favorite today in a pretty good spot is Julio Urias from the Dodgers. He comes in right around -200 to start. The Padres stink pretty bad, especially they're, you know, really bad against lefties, especially because, you know, any really most of the way of their good hitting at this point comes from lefty side of the ball. And outside of Myers, there's really no one that worries me here. Is Julio a guy that you can stomach in cash games here? He could be the other sort of price play for people considering the money line and he's and some peripheral things for him. Is he a guy that is showing up in your radar at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Urias, very, very interesting prospect for starters. I mean, again, he's super, super young, 20 years old. And any 20-year-old that can put up 70 strikeouts and 63 innings in the majors is worth consideration for sure. The problem with him is the Dodgers are being rightfully cautious with his both pitch counts and inning totals. Like, it's not unusual for the Dodgers to pull him after 75 pitches, 88 pitches. You know, they seem to be stretching him out more recently. And you love that he just crushed the Cubs in his last start.
Right.
Like that's very encouraging at Cincinnati, tough ballpark. So he's a guy that I'm absolutely going to consider for big tournaments. Huge upside there. And again, on an underwhelming slate, the ideal matchup against the Dodgers or against the Padres in Dodger Stadium. So I think I could definitely see a lot of people wind up playing him. I guess where I'm feeling a little bit hesitant is a lot of people are going to look at him and be like, he's a six innings per start guy. But he hasn't been all season, and so while today is as good a day as any for him to go out there and throw six innings, frankly, I just don't think you can count on that. A little bit of trouble early could just see him with another short hook, making him, and I should say specifically that's a problem because it makes the win so much more or less likely when you're essentially capped at 5.5 innings, you know?
And I think what this mostly just all speaks to is this, is that there are pitchers that are in this salary zone, like Tyone, Urias, Urias, I think I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly, Stroman. I think there's enough of these guys where you can take a cash game strategy of sort of, because I think what's going to happen is no matter who you play from these guys, the bats are going to be relatively the same, which we'll get to in a second. I think the bats end up being for our system, it would just basically swap around one or two guys while keeping most of the rest of the bats the same. And I think that there's a situation where for cash games especially, you can take, you can mitigate some of your risk. And really for all these guys, or for at least two of the three of them, it's really more of a pitch count risk than it's a matchup risk for me, considering their price. So I think you can feel decent about just swapping some of them around and sure. and running lineups like that. And I don't think that's, I think that's, it's a, definitely a hedge, but I think that's the correct kind of hedge for the situations we're talking about. Because I, what I don't think I would do is hedge by paying up in pitching, considering the matchups. I think I'd rather just grab a little, you know, a few shares of each of these guys, maybe spread out equally and kind of run it that way. I think that if I were to start right now, that would probably be my strategy.
Yeah, that really speaks to another underrated way to reduce variance on a given night, which is just play different guys in different lineups. Like, I know that's something that we do a lot. You know, we've gone back and forth on the idea of hedging quite a bit, but I think that, again, for new players, instead of playing one $10 double up, if you just play five $2 double ups with, you know, spread across two pitchers you like quite a bit, you'll find a lot less heartache, and you can have similar expectation on a given night. So, like, maybe you're gun-shy about playing Tyone tonight in cash games, but your gut tells you you should play the guy with the best expectation. Well, play, you know, two $2 double ups with Tyone and two $2 double ups with Carrasco or Syndergaard or whoever you think the chalk guy is going to be. And that way, sure, you're still giving up a little bit of expectation, but you're also going to maintain your sanity a little bit, even if you just wind up breaking even on a given night. So I think that that's a perfectly reasonable approach, especially for newer players.
Right, because those pitchers are mutually exclusive, you know, events. They have nothing, you know, those two guys, let's speak about Leo, Julio and Jameson right now. Those two guys have nothing really to do with each other. And so if around the same price, you can, I know some people will say, well, you know, one will be good, one will be bad. Well, right. But it doesn't,
maybe
one doesn't, well, one doesn't impact the other even in the slightest. And so, so just having them both, they could just both be good. And if the situation is good for both of them, then I don't think you're really giving up that much in the way of expected wins if to just grab them both. All right, that was a lot of super hot pitcher talk for the first many, many minutes of this, but let's go into the bats before we get out of here. The bats, to me, don't strike me as the decisions aren't as close, I don't think, because especially if we're not having to pay up or if we're in a situation where, and I know I'm going to speak strictly for our system, it is going to tell you to not really spend up at pitcher today. That leaves really the game and cores and a couple other situations, and one I actually want to clear out right away because it's something I noticed last night and something that the guys in our chat, guys and gals in our chat room are talking about right now, is that the Phillies pricing, especially on DraftKings, I'm not sure if it was just a mistake or if it's just this is the way their algorithm is trending, but the Phillies guys, like the top of the order guys, are all priced at $2,000. So Odubel Herrera, Michael Franco, Freddie Galvis, who's less intriguing to me than the other two guys, specifically those first two guys, are $2,000 each, and that is like your second and third hitter in the Phillies lineup. They are facing Joel De La Cruz. This is a chalkiest of chalk situations for me personally. De La Cruz stinks, though. $2,000 for just about anybody that hits at the top of a lineup, you know, it doesn't need to be guys who actually, you know, Franco and Herrera actually can hit. Is this just an automatic situation for you? Like, do you, we even need to think about it really? Or is it just like on DraftKings?
Yeah, no, those prices are completely busted. You just got to play them. I mean, there's an argument to be made that you can save up enough of pitching just, and you'll just wind up going so expensive that maybe you only need one or something. But yeah, generally you're going to play both of those guys or just expect to be up against them in a huge, huge portion of lineups today.
Yeah. I don't think, I think anyone that has any kind of system or any kind of clue is that this is not going to be a secret to anybody. They're just, they're simply just mispriced. I mean, they're pretty cheap on FanDuel as well, not to the same degree because the pricing range on DraftKings is more pronounced than it is on FanDuel. So while still cheap over there and still actually, I think, you know, considered to be value plays, it's not as simple as it is. Franco, $2,500 on FanDuel, I'd probably easily pretty much lock and load that one. But $2,000 for those guys is a mistake. After those guys, is it really just, is it all cores for you with the righties out of Arizona, or maybe some righties from the Rockies? Is that where you're looking, or is there a couple other spots to look?
Yeah, I mean, I think you talked about this earlier, but the Diamondbacks on both sites, frankly, could be more expensive. Yeah. FanDuel in particular, like Castillo at 37, Goldschmidt at 48. are just very, very affordable. Over on DraftKings, you can get AJ Pollock for 4,000, which I think is just completely wrong. So now you're starting to get in a situation where your lineup is getting pretty well fleshed out.
Right, and this is what I was kind of talking about with switching around pitchers. Like on DraftKings, there's almost no chance right now between the couple $2,000 guys you have, and plus some of those, you know, Pollock is, I think Pollock is frankly mispriced at 4,000. He'll be another hugely chalk play considering he's second. He should be second in the lineup today, I would suspect. Between Castillo, Goldschmidt, Pollock, Franco, and Herrera, like that is a pretty big percentage of your lineup to start, and I just don't imagine at the points per dollar we're getting any of these guys that it switches this much. So then you just take those guys, kind of fill in around the margins with some other plays, that, and I think you're kind of just done. I don't know. This is why
I'm worth hat tip to Jose Bautista, who is just still criminally underpriced on FanDuel in particular, at 3,800 and very affordable on DraftKings at 44. So, you know, still leading off and just doing his thing, right? Just another 2 for 4, 21 fantasy points. What more do you want from the guy? All he does is go out there and put up numbers every single night.
So. Yeah, and the Blue Jays are smart. They hit him lead off. So, like, I just don't – I know it's Cobb. I know the ballpark's not that good, but this is sometimes where pedigree trumps the other pieces of whatever can come into play, like ballpark or even opposing pitcher to some degree. 3,800 is, to me, no-brainer. Even Trout. I mean, the thing is here, if you're not paying up much for pitching, again, you're just going to be able to roster – you know, three quarters of an all-star team with all these guys. I don't think for me, we need to spend too much time talking about it. The Coors game jumps to the top. The Phillies guys are cheap. A couple other bats here and there. The system for us fleshes this out for you pretty well, and it'll continue to flesh it out as we get lineups that come in through the course of the afternoon and the evening. But let's, you know, outside of those two games, let's say now I'm going to go to our GPP section where every
deep stacks
where every single player is in play, because that's just sort of the theory behind tournaments. What is there like a team that you maybe see as could is in a really good spot today that might go a little less owned because of the, you know, the teams we already talked about?
Well, I have a good matchup that it's a little bit spicy, Doug. A little spicy. Oh, pero spice. and that's those Blue Jays against Alex Cobb. I mean, yeah, bad park, and Cobb is a name pitcher that people will recognize, although maybe not as many as we think, because, you know, a lot of people have gotten more into baseball thanks to DFS recently. But Cobb has only thrown 21 innings this season and didn't throw any innings last season.
Right.
So he and the numbers that he put up in a high A and triple A were terrible. So I don't know that he is anything like the pitcher he was when he went down. I mean, the thing with Cobb is high ground ball rate probably will be able to reproduce that kind of regardless just based on his repertoire. But If you are going to tell me there was one team, like, that he just gets chased in the third inning because the Blue Jays crushed him, would not be surprised at all, and that will not be a team that many people are on today. And you're not having to speculate on, like, you know, the Phillies going off. Like, these are all guys that can just hit the ball 450 feet, so I wouldn't be shocked at all if that winds up being the best possible GPP stack, just because they'll be relatively underowned and high performing.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. The team that I'm probably looking for is not as off the radar as that. I'm saying Blue Jays being off the radar because of, I don't know, Cobb. People have heard of Cobb, and the ballpark is bad. Sure. I have no problem with the take on that. But the team that you can get a slight discount on with a run total, you know, at least in range of what's happening in Coors, is the Rangers today. They take on Doug Fister. Fister cannot strike anybody out. I know he's had some decent games here and there where he, and some people will point to, like, you know, I think he had a big strikeout game against Pittsburgh. Let me just check that real quick. But Fister just historically is just not right. So he had 6 strikeouts against Pittsburgh in 7 innings. That is about as good as a game you'll ever have. Oh, God.
Well,
had,
and you know, like,
he had 8 against Toronto.
Talk about damning with faint praise when you're like, now, I'm going to cite one outlier start for this guy. He pitched 7 innings and got 6 strikeouts. Like, you know,
well, he had a 6-inning game. He had a 6-inning 8K game against Toronto back at the beginning of the month. But either way, historically, this guy is not anything close to a strikeout upside pitcher. Terrible park for him. Great park for the Rangers. They will feature a couple bats at the top of the line. Like, if they keep hitting Mazzara lead off, I really like him. Beltran. Their lineup just goes so deep. That is why that obviously helps their implied run total as a whole, that they just go they just give you problems really all the way down to like the seventh spot,
sure.
basically. Odor will be in that fifth spot. I really like stacking some of those Rangers today. Just their implied run total is great. The park is great. It's not cores, but it's not so far off that it still boosts power across the board. So I kind of like the Rangers in this spot as well.
Sure. And a lot of listeners won't know that, incidentally, a lot of your friends call you Doug Pfister. Just for other reasons.
We're from DFSR.com, Daily Fantasy
Sports.
And
it's because you're consistent and sort of mediocre performance. That's what I'm talking about.
I'm going to think about in post if that's going to stay in or not. We're from DFSR.com, DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, here to get you started with Major League Baseball lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings and NFL as well. If you go over to the site right now, DFSR.com/lab, L-A-B, you can grab a free 8-day trial. No, excuse me. Yep, 8-day trial, if I count those days correctly, to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that helps you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL and MLB. It'll take you through the first week of the NFL season, which we are beyond excited about. We're about to record an NFL pod right after this. So if you get done listening here, go subscribe to our NFL pod as well on iTunes, and you can get the sweet sounds of Doug and James really throughout your whole day talking any manner of sports you want. All right, buddy, I'm off to do the NFL pod. If for those of you that don't listen, we'll talk to you again on Monday. All right,
buddy, let's do it
later.